what's written on the slide for reserve analysis or reverse analysis is the contingency reserves may be the percentage of the estimated cost. A fixed number or many of an outcome of analysis, such as quantitative analysis that we did, and I explained you the earlier in the earlier chapter. Contingency reserves are part of the cost baseline and the project overall funding requirements. As more precise information about the project is available, the contingency reserve may be used, reduced, or eliminated completely. The reverse of unknown unknowns is called as management reserves. Is also not included in the cost baseline, but withheld for management control processes. There are reserves for unforeseen work that may appear in the scope of the project. The management reserves is not a part of scope baseline, but it's a part of overall budget, budget planning and funding requirements. So when we say there's an X buffer that I have for a project, that could be the amount that I keep for my known unknown or unknown unknown. So things that I know that I don't know, or things that I just don't know. So that's the part of it. So ideally from a figure point of view, it might be say 2% of the overall budget or 3% of the overall budget. So depending upon the strategy that the organization is planning, or depending upon the project and how risk oriented the project is. So supposedly a company is into a research that is going to take say 2 years to complete the research, and it just goes to 4 years, which I never calculated. So the cost of 2 years have to be into my contingency reserves or my management reserves. So the two different things, management reserves and contingency reserves, are two different things. Management reserves are things for unknown, unknown things. I don't know that I don't know. Contingency reserves are I know that I don't know. So that's the contingency reserve. So it becomes very clear for us of what reserves are we talking about. When an amount of management reserve is used to fund unforeseen work, the same is added to the cost baseline, which is an approved, is a change approved mechanism. Reverse analysis approach establishes contingency and management reserves and are identified in the budget document, are informed to restricted groups of the stakeholders. So as I said, this is something that is not shown out to the public or the entire project team. This is something that is kept only within the stakeholders. So let me give you a quick example on how these reserves work. Let's consider, I have an organization, and the organization says there are 2,000 employees in the organization. This year, this fiscal year, which is 15-16, we decide as an organization that we have to save 10% of the sales expenditure that we do. That's the target that's been given, and that's a project. So we have to optimize processes in such a format that we save 10% cost on sale, which is acquisition cost of the customer. Now that's an example. That's a project. So now what's the baseline that the management is thinking about, or the top management is thinking about? Even if you're able to save 5%, we are back home. But the way it has been drilled down to the team is 10%. Why? Because they'll try to hit 10% very, very hard. Okay, and in that reach around 7% or 6% of the targets, which means that you still have profits of 2% left with you. So important is that you create. So this is like a cost saving project that I gave you an example. Let's look at a different aspect of adding management reserves to it. Let's say a company declares their profits as 4,000 crore rupees is the profit that we declare for the fiscal year. Now, with all the projects that the company has done in expenditure, the savings that they have done in management reserves, which may not be utilized at all, directly are linked to the profit of the organization, which means the company actually builds in pressures with the employees. The project managers build the pressures with the employees to complete a certain project or a task in a given cost. So whatever is the cost that's kept for management reserves or contingency reserves mainly, is directly transferred to the profits of the organization, because that's the saving that the organization has done. So that's exactly what the last sentence also talks about. Any unused reserves will directly enhance the level of profitabilities. Now that's something that we got to learn, that any unused, if I have unused reserves, if you look at the slide, it says again, any unused reserves will directly enhance the profit levels, which means it directly shows it into my profit levels. Now that's very important that I keep doing it. So I got to give pressure to my team to complete a task in a given cost. Why do I need to do that? So that whatever I save at the end of the day is going to be, is going to be my profits. So let me give you a very personal example also, from a personal life point of view, so you understand the terminology correctly. Say I have a salary of 50,000 rupees. I decide that my salary is 40,000 rupees and I'm going to make expenditures only worth 40,000 rupees. What happens to 10,000 rupees? Those go in my saving, right? Now that is your profit of yourself. That's the profit that you make within yourself. So, over a period of, say 10 years, if you're able to save 10,000 rupees per month, how much is the money that you've saved for yourself and what's the profit that you've built for yourself? Now, that's a question you have to ask. So, that's how you also can manage your personal finances, if you understand that contingency reserves and management reserves are not to be touched at any cost. Now, that's the way. So, you manage everything in 40,000 rupees. So, you build your resources that way. You build your requirements that way. You shop that way. You buy products that way. Everything that you do. Or else, what happens is, sometimes when I don't have these restrictions for myself or for the projects, it might just go haywire and I don't have anything in my hand. So that is something that we got to understand when it comes to budgeting. Let's look at cost budgeting, which continues with historical data. Now, one more method to be used. Historical data or historical relationship budgeting approach is used for analogous projects similar to the executed in the past. As simple as that. So say I'm doing a project which I've already done. Say, an example that I gave you in last time, which was maybe a college project that you're doing to clean up the the environment or the roads around your college campus. You've similarly done that project, and then after 2 years, the similar project has to be done again. So what is the cost that you're going to refer? You're going to refer to everything that is done in past, and probably add on 5 or 7% more onto it. So that's how historical data helps you, and hence history of the data is integral, and it has to be stored vigilantly. So ideally, if you look at it in this kind of a format, it's the most easiest way of doing it. So you build up around 5-7%, and you start working around it. Let's read through what it is written on the slide as well. It says, this uses project characteristics to develop a mathematical model to predict the project's costs. Such model use multiple separate adjustment factors, each of which has numerous considerations within. So one of the considerations that I gave you is maybe the rising inflation. So if there's inflation, if there's a cost that's getting high, so you might just add up, say, 7%, 5%, 10% and take up the entire budget. The cost and accuracy of analogous parametric model are likely to be reliable only if. Now, there are three parameters around it. Historical information used in the model is accurate. So, whatever you've done in the past, it's a similar kind of a project and it has all the parameters almost same. So, that's one of the premise that you need to use the historical data. Parameter is used in the model of quantifiable. Whether you have quantified the resources that you've taken off, whether you've quantified the methods that you've taken off, becomes the most integral part. Of course, models are scalable, such as the work of a large project, small project, or phase out project. Your model is scalable. If your model is not scalable, which means it can be replicated. If the project is not a project which was not not the nature of replication, then you cannot use historical data unless your model has a scalable model, which means it's a changing model. Then it's the time that we can actually use historical data. This takes us to the next slide, which talks about one good example is the model to calculate the cost per square feet of a construction project, right? So, very easy way of calculating historical data. So let's give me an example. In 2000, the cost of a flat in Mumbai could be say 1 crore rupees. Today it's gone to 10 crore rupees. So why is it gone to 10 crore rupees? So there are various factors. A lot of people, a lot of demand in the city. A lot of jobs opening in the city. People traveling across the country. Cost of steel, cost of cement, cost of acquisition of land, cost of acquisition of resources, which are the government fees might have gone up, and a lot of other things. Get on to bring that cost from 1 crore to 10 crore today. So that's how we should calculate. That's a beautiful way. So square feet is a beautiful way of doing it. Let's move on to the next part of it, which says the funding limit conciliation. Now, this is a new word and I want you to realize this. Let's look at what is written on the slide and I'll give you an example around it as well. So, funding limit reconciliation approach will fix up, establish a limit of an expenditure for project funds. The aggregate of planned expenses are the compared with the fixed limits. The variable funding, the variable between the funding limits and planned expenses will sometimes necessitate the rescheduling of activities, work packages to level the expenditure. This can be accomplished by imposing various constraints such as time, material rate, reduction, resources by using efficient alternatives. Now, this is something that is used by a lot of organizations today. So, let me give you an example. Supposedly, I have a budget. I have a policy that my employees in an organization will travel by a car like Innova every time, everywhere. All right, that's the policy. Now, in that policy, I will have a lot of vendors who come to me, and I give them a period saying I will require your Innova, say 20 times in a month, so close to 240 times in a year, and the average utilization per time would be around 1,000 kilometers. So into 2040 into 2000 into 1,000 is going to be like 240 lakh kilometers. Now, that is the quantum that I'm giving you. I need the rate at 6 rupees or 7 rupees per kilometer, because my budget is 7 and I am going to only talk about 7 kilometers per hour. But now in market, it's close to 10 or 12 kilometers per hour, per kilometer. Based on my quantum, based on my budgets, I finalize and find a vendor which gives me at 7. Why? Because I already decided that I can't exceed my 7 rupees per kilometer, because it will exceed my overall budget of logistics and traveling. So this is how you come out with a reconciliation that, okay, this is how I'm going to procure the entire vendor or entire facility or service that I want to. So that's an example or fund limit conciliation around it. Let's look at what is outputs that we would get out of budgets. I get a cost baseline. I'm not going to talk much on this, because now the word itself completely tells you the cost baseline is the basic money requirement for each and every activity or work package in a project. So that's a simple thing, but I'll read it through you for the on the slide. The cost baseline is an approved version of the time, phase, project budget, including any management reserve. The cost baseline can be changed through formal change control procedures, which we've described in the earlier processes. That what is a change control method? I need to go back to the stakeholders, defining, identifying, and letting them know why the change is happening in any parameter. The cost baseline is used as a basic basis of comparison to actual results. The cost baseline for the entire project is developed by summation of approved budgets for the various schedule activities, work packages, as explained in the figure below, which I'm going to take you through now. Now that's the figure that we have. If you look at it, the first thing says project budget, second says management reserves. So my management reserves will have cost baseline and cost or control accounts. When I say control account, what do I mean by that, and what do I cost baseline? This is my overall budget of the project, say $100,000. My cost baseline is I will have $8,100 to be spent, and my cost control has come down to $1,700. Contingency reserves work package cost estimates is say $10,000. the activity contingency reserves, what is the actual that has happened. So in this process, I will completely have an identification. If my cost baseline is in green and my control is account control is control accounts is in green, which means I am far better on my budgeting during the project. How does it mean that? The cost baseline would be, say, to give you an Indian example, it would be, say, I have to spend, my budget max is $10,000, 10,000 rupees, and I have controlled that in 8,000. So what's the profit that I've made here? It's 2,000 rupees that I've made. What are the packages that I estimated? And it gives me the complete description about that as well. So this is how you actually can work out your budgets and be in control of your budgets. So this takes us to the next part, which talks about budget investments and approval. And but how does it work? Of course, let's look at it. Budget project funding and investment around it. The total and periodic funding requirements, monthly or quarterly. So not necessary if I require $100,000, I require it at one shot. Maybe I have to phase my investments. I have to, maybe I require $2,000 every month or $5,000 every month and over a period of, say, 1 year. That's how I have to phase out my money because investors or your stakeholders are not going to give you money at one go. They would want to see an incremental progress. If you remember, I gave you an example on NSDC, how government operates the skill development programs these days. Is the vendor does some work and then a lot of money has been, you know, out of the entire project, say 10% has been allotted to the vendor. So that's the mechanism we're talking about, derived from the cost baseline. The fund values derived are often incremental amounts which are not continuous. The fund requirements also may not, eventually or evenly distributed over a period and shall appear in steps. The fund requirement data can be used for financial planning, approvals, and to identify the resources of the funding. So let me give you an example. How would it look like? From a project phase point of view, my project initiation point of view, to the project closeout point of view, it will be a bell curve. So I'll just draw this. It will be this way. Why? Because cost would be high when I'm executing something, which I need to be very clear about. So I will have a cost baseline. I will have a investment that's coming to me in a bell curving method. So initially you require some money, then a little more, then a little more, then a little more, and it will eventually go down when my project is at closeout. So that's how a bell curving will look at. It will be a bell curve when you look at a cost that's been estimated. So after completion of the budget task, some of the most important project documents should be updated. I'll read few of them. The prominent one are risk register, activity cost estimates document, and the project schedule. Because project schedule is, again, as I said, schedule is directly connected to cost. So that's something that I should be able to update. Investments. That's the next thing that we're going to talk. So let's read through what's written on the slide and then I'll explain you how do we term investments from project management point of view. Investments are expenses that are incurred to execute the project but are not part of the project deliverables. For example, cement mixing plant installed for a construction project, machinery purchased for a manufacturing of car. All projects are executing needs, different types of investments, which will vary in nature and type depending on the type of project, duration of the execution, existing infrastructure and facilities, and other projects under execution with their status. The investments are categorized as various investments are categorized at various types. So investment proposals. All investment proposals must be made well in advance to fulfill the requirement as per the schedule requirement. The roles and responsibilities of the project manager, indenter, approver, purchaser, and must be clear, identified, and identified and defined in appropriate project document. Most common in an organization standard operating procedures, basically. So these are also called as the SOPs of the organization. So I want you to draw your attention to project manager, indenter, approver, and purchaser. So who is the project manager? The person is executing it. Indenter is a person who's actually putting the requirement, somebody from procurement. Who's the approver? Either the HOD or the person who's actually approving that cost. And last is, of course, who's the purchaser. So purchaser is the person who's going to get benefited out of it. So these are different levels where my cost has or my investments will reflect. Now, what is the difference between budget and investments? Investments could be in any terms. Budget is more cost oriented. Investment could be from a point of view of machinery. Investment could be a point of view of infrastructure, software. Investments could be intellectual investments. Investments could be money also. So these are various types of investments. Now my project, I need to understand how my proposal works. So let's have a look at this of how my proposal works. The proposal's content must include the following bare minimum. This has to be there. So it's a must here. So what is it? It needs to have the size. It needs to have the capacity. Peripheral requirements, if it's a, the complete technical information, what is required. Power and utility equipment requirements, software requirements, environmental requirements, statutory and regulatory requirements, floor requirements, human resource qualification, details of alternatives, installation and commission requirement, and stages of completion and utilization. So from this example, it's more from a machinery that has to be picked up for executing a project. So cost of machinery is my investment. Okay, the budget is execution of the project. So that's the difference. There's a key difference. So in this case, if you look at it, what's the size of that machine? What's the capacity of that machine? So how much can it produce? What are the peripheral requirements? What is the kind of electricity do I require? What is the kind of space that I require? What is the kind of setup do I require? Does it require a complete air-conditioned room, or it requires an open room, open air? Whatever it is, the peripheral requirements, software requirements, how would it get manifested in terms of my productivity, environmental requirements, is it emitting lot of things which will hazard the environment, statutory and regulatory requirements, what are the kind of sets, so for to give, is it an ISI, ADMARC, IS2, ISO 2000, whatever requirement it has. Human resource qualification, people, person who's going to handle that machine, is he qualified enough? He has to send to some. So these are all kind of investments that I do for my project to get executed well. Let's look at the next. Delivery requirements, location of the delivery, contacts and responsible authorities for receiving the proposal investments, propose of the investment required, justifications in the investments proposal with comparison. So if it's a machine to be bought, I need to have the as-is, which is the current state of my production, and the next state of my production post-procuring this machine. So I need to have a straight comparison to be done in my project proposal, my investment proposal. Impact of the non-availability or delay in providing the proposed investments, budget allocation and various, if any, with the reasons and justification. Type of investment, project specific or is general. So when it comes to health and safety, it could be a general requirement or general investment that an organization has to do for their project. However, if it is not, maybe it's project specific, then it's an investment for project. So I need to also understand, if I'm buying a machinery, what I'm going to do post that project. So hence, while creating that proposal, I need to ensure that the machines that I'm creating, or machines that I'm procuring, or services that I'm procuring, can it be utilized post my project also, and it will give me an amplifying effect. So to give you a very beautiful example, let's look at our film industry, the Indian film industry. You see a lot of these big artwork and art directors who create these big bungalows and the big palaces for a movie. What's it? Is it an investment or is it just a budget? So ideally, it's an investment if you look at it. To prepare the shoot scene for a hero, for a heroine, or for a villain, it's important to create that ambience around from the genre of the movie. So the artwork that's done is an investment, but it's not a part of my budget. So my movie budget, will have that kind of an investment. And that's how investments differ from budgets. So investments are required things before I start the project, and budget is the cost of execution, is the budget. So that's what we just said, the type of investments that we will have. Let's look at the next slide, which talks about approvals of the budgets.
I'll read through the slide and then explain how it works. The project team, while executing the project and passing through various phases, needs a number of approvals. These are not necessary financial approvals only. All these approvals are not necessary for internal authorities. These approvals, if not ensured at the schedule or in advance, may generate hold points and delay the project schedule. Considering the importance of approvals, the same are elaborated specifically through the same as covered in 7 stages of the project of the project management. The first level of classification is internal and external. So let me give you an example of internal and external first. Say I have internal approvals. How can they get delayed? I'm a project manager, or maybe I'm considering me as an HOD, and there is a new change that has happened in a project. According to the change document, unless the HOD approves or the project champion approves this method, it will not go ahead. And consider I am on leave. I'm for some personal contingencies, I am on leave. What happens to that project? What happens to that decision? Who does that? If that gets delayed, it's going to delay my entire schedule. If it is going to entire schedule, it's going to increase my cost. So remember, that's an internal approval mechanism. Let's go to the external approval mechanism. To open up a plant near a river bank, maybe a small scale industry, say a leather industry, which prepares shoes or belts, which has churning of leather done and the extract goes in the river. I need an environmental approval, that's an external approval. That's government dependent approval. Now that's how internal and external approvals work on. Let's look at internal approvals. That's what we talk about in the view of project management plan. Well-defined organization policies and standard operating procedures. Internal approvals are comparatively easier to identify, incorporate, schedule, and execute and control. Let's look at a few of them. One of it's corporate approvals. So there's a corporate department which overlooks the entire functioning of the organization. Budget approvals will go to finance. Investment approvals go to stakeholders. Fund requirement approvals go to the HODs of the finance department. Financial expenses will go to procurement. Engineering approvals will go to the technical team. Procurement will come to the procurement team. Quality will come to the QMS team. Delivery will come to the logistic team. Invoicing would come to the finance team. Human resource will come to HR. Subcontracting will come to outsourcing. Approvals of professional and other services will come to the specific departments. And of course, if there's any change in the approvals. So these are internal and you can identify them. The more crucial are the external ones. Let's look at them. External approvals vary from project to project and are not fully known. There may be approvals from customers, inspection agencies, state governments, union government agencies. Since these are varying from project to project, it is essential to identify, incorporate, schedule, and execute and control these approvals with appropriate project. Execution and control of these approvals is not as easy task as the project executor has no control over the agency. Unless my approval is coming from the irrigation department, when it comes to the example of a leather company that I want to establish that I gave you, I can't move forward unless I have if I'm in a contracting mode and I have a project of building a bridge. Unless the budget approvals come from the National Highway Authority, I will not be able to. Even if I have to, extend the road by even 10 inches, forget about 10 meters, 10 inches, I need an approval. If I don't get an approval, I'm not going to execute or I'm not be able to execute that project. Now, that is something that you and I have to understand, that external approvals take more time than internal approvals, because internal approvals have started with a cause and external approvals will come to you if your cause is matched with their cause. So unless you match your cause and their cause, it's not going to come up. So, and hence it is always said that government approvals take a lot of time. Customer approvals take a lot of time because customer will dwell on quality because he's spending money on that. So those might take time for him to eradicate the issues that he has and you have and then come on to an approval stage. That's about external. In order to keep the approval process under control in spite of delays, it is always advised to keep sufficient buffer, safety margins with reference to the time element. The project agreement, contract, project specification and applicable statutory and regulatory norms are the basis of consolidating a required approval. They must be addressed in overall project management plan. And that's exactly why it's written that way, is because it will take time and you need to inculcate that time in your project time. Let's look at external approvals a little more in detail. The external approvals include but are not limited to approvals from financial institutions. So if I'm applying for a loan, unless they give me a green signal that the loan is going to be passed by an offering letter, I will not be able to procure the material for that. Engineering approvals from customers or appointed agencies, quality approvals from customers, tax exemptions approvals in case of public sector or contract terms. We have approvals of building layouts and manufacturing facilities because building layouts will come under the civil department of the government. Approvals of power, you know, because electricity is something that again goes through the government. So I need approvals for them as well, and utility. So utility could be water resources, could be postal resources, could be the gas resources if I'm working out a residential complex and all. Approvals of storage of flammable gases, pollution control, safety, material storage, approvals for installed, you know, explosive mining materials, emission approvals. So one of the examples that is emission approval. I need to have an extract emission approval from the irrigation department while I'm putting my extract in the river. For the leather industry that I gave an example to. Safety approvals, contract labor approvals. So these are approvals that I require from external agencies and parties. Impact of approval, there are only two impacts. If it comes on time, it's going fine. If it's not coming on time, it's going to delay a project. But I'll still go ahead and read this slide for you. It says some of the approvals are required to be taken during manufacturing or construction or installation and commissioning and are required to be provided before finding handing over of the project. Some of them are hold points for the next activity phase. So let me give you an example. Say I have bought a new house. Unless I have my plinth certificate, unless the constructor or the builder does not have the plinth certificate for every plinth that he's putting in, every floor that he's putting in, he cannot construct the final thing, the next floor. That's one. Second, if I have a project submission approval, which means I have to submit the project, my complete submission, government agencies have to come and check whether I've done the correct job, and then I get an approval. Now that approval, if I don't get, I will not be able to sell my flat if I'm a constructor or a builder. So that's an important approval that I require to sell a flat or a house. So that's how we go to identify. So in this case, agencies provide chargeable approval services like inspection agencies or maximum time allotted to them. So that's so everything that you do and take approvals on will always have some charge at the government agency. So you've got to keep that in mind. And I'm sure in India, all of us are aware that government approvals will take a little more time because it's a process of lot of interventions and lot of the file moves on to a lot of tables around. In case the customer appointed agencies also maximize approvals, time shall be parted on the contract. Any delay must be recorded and intimated to the customer before in time, with the impact of the delivery and the quality of the deliverables. It is seen on many occasions that the bulk of the project expense has have been incurred. Majority of the activities, work packages are completed, but the overall completion, closing of the project is pending because of some of the approvals. That's exactly what an example I gave you about. If the completion certificate doesn't come to a builder from the municipal corporation, even if I've completed the entire building and I've sold the entire building, I still can't hand over the entire building to the society that's been formed. So unless my completion certificate, that becomes a very integral and important document of approval from the government to me. Let's look at other things when it comes to impact. We're talking about warranty extensions of the equipment installed. Again, civil example. Maybe I have a lift that's been installed, and what's the warranty of the lift that I have, and is it in a maintenance of the equipment installed? So who's going to do the maintenance? How's going to do the maintenance? Extended stay of the site engineers if they have to stay there for a longer period of time. No receipt of payment. What do we do with that? Financial class flow crunch. We finished our money. I mean, for whatever reason, investors are not ready to invest now. Finish your money. What do you do that? So if you don't get approvals on right time, these are some of the implications that you might face while you are working with any project. The next is, of course, non-movement of manufacturing equipment, generators, transport, material equipment, facilities for one or the other side. So, possibility, right? I mean, I have these big machineries which can't be moved from one side to the other side. So, what do I do? And then how do I get them? Do I actually dismantle them? So, for dismantling it, I require approvals from various stakeholders. Expenses of security for the extended period of time. My project was scheduled for 1 year, and I had to secure that project for 1 year with security guards and all the security personnel. And it has gone to 1.5 years, half years now. So how do 6 months cost been incurred? So I need to have an approval for that as well. Delay in starting the project, possible, right? I mean, a lot of times, you know, for a lot of reasons, there will be a delay that will incur a cost. And the moment it incurs a cost, I need an approval. Delay on testing, installation, commissioning of the work or work packages. Delay in recovering the ROI in case the private partnership project. In case of additional expenses are recoverable as per the contract terms, a record of all these such expenses and intimation of customers for time to time is mandatory. Project manager role is very vital for the purpose of such record and expenses. So just keep that in mind, that your records will play a major role. This brings us to the end of chapter 9, and I will see you in chapter 10. Thank you very much.